This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for, yes, you've already heard the theme, so you know our new theme, which is the same as the Bones TV show. Thank you, CBS. This is Jay Koronek, and this is the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for you, our loyal listeners, anywhere in the world. We are 89.3 FM, the station making waves. We don't do things like other stations, and this show covers public information stories that you probably won't hear covered or covered in the same way on any other radio station in the Detroit area. And we are broadcasting from Henry Ford Community College today. If I didn't mention it already, my name is Jay Koronek. And in the studio with me is my co-host for today, Ned Apigian. So, Ned, this is the mic check time. How are you doing today?
I'm fine.
Okay.
Is it working good?
Oh, yeah. We found you already.
Thank God.
Just got to keep myself on mic here. So, yes, what we're all about is looking at the local stories, and I thought since it is national, I had to grab the stories, but also it's extremely current, and you'll hear about these later. One you heard yesterday is that GM is closing a number of dealerships. Chrysler announced yesterday that they are specifically closing dealerships in the area, and they've named them. Today, GM's has notified 1,100 dealers they will be dropped, and this just came off the New York Times from the internet just a few minutes ago, about 12:40. If you're listening to the show as a podcast, today is the 15th of May.
Is 1,100 of all brands, or
no? 1,100 of General Motors dealerships.
That's what I meant.
Yeah,
Buick or
it's interesting. They don't plan to announce publicly the dealers that it no longer wants. Whereas Chrysler did that, and I have the list. I thought it might be interesting to some of our listeners to hear what's closing locally by October 2010. The same thing is GM is going to be not renewing these franchises. And the dealership can keep their building and their land, but they can't sell those kinds of cars if they lose their franchise. Okay, oh. So it's not that the dealerships, but if you don't have the major franchise you've had for years and years, what are you going to do? Can you pick up a foreign car, a franchise?
What if you repair? Can you get the parts for repairing?
They could continue to do that. The parts should continue to be available, of course, since the government is guaranteeing, warranty repair at least.
So you can get GM parts at the former franchise store?
Maybe. If the store, if that dealership decides to stay open, they might just sell the property and go out of business.
Right. I mean, yeah, if they stayed open.
Yeah. Now, in addition to that, they expect to shed about 500 dealers, which they've already announced, that sell only Pontiac, Saturn, Saab, or Hummer. Those are the brands that Intel is to sell off or just close down. If they can't sell them, they're just going to close them down. So any dealership, we already knew that, or maybe our listeners didn't, but if they sell only Pontiac, Saturn, Saab, or Hummer, they will be gone unless they can sell those particular brands. And I don't know who would make the cars, though. You got to swap factories or something.
There's a story that Roger Penske may want to buy Saturn.
Yeah.
So if he does, they want to move Saturn as a whole package.
That's right. Hummer, too. But I'm not sure he's going to do that. Yeah, Roger Penske, I happened to buy a Chevy Corvette from him when he had a Chevy dealership here in the Detroit area back in the early 70s, of all things. Yeah, he actually owned Chevy dealership, and it was the lowest price in town. I thought that was cool since he's has racing fame. But he actually owns, if I'm not mistaken, the smart car distribution rights to the North America. That's the little dinky car.
Yeah.
And there's only one dealership I know, and it's out Auburn Hills, out Pontiac way, for a smart car. They're very small. I think small car, two-person cars. Anyway, even after the cuts, folks, the dealership networks of GM and Chrysler will still be several times larger than those of foreign competitors like Toyota and Honda. So, people need to go. They don't need to go looking as much. They say, "Oh, I'll never be able to find a Dodge or a Chrysler or a Chevy dealer after they close them all." No, that's not true. They'll still have a ton of dealers. I always thought years ago that they had too many dealers of the U.S. car brands. I mean, it's true that maybe you just go to the dealer nearest your house, but
yeah, still, in one location, 3 miles apart, there's 3-4 dealers.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of close.
Just seems kind of crazy, unless they somehow have different audiences. And in talking to a former student of mine who's at a Ford dealership here in Dearborn, he thinks that Ford will close. Now, this is just because they're unprofitable. Ford won't force it, but that about 20 dealers in the southeastern Detroit area of Ford's are going to close. Now, I don't know about the two main dealers in Dearborn of Ford's exclusively. I know one of them, last month anyway, was profitable. They said they were anyway.
And, can I offer something on that since I was involved in my youth in designing Ford dealerships?
Oh, yeah, go ahead, Ned.
Some of these franchise stores are what Ford calls dealer development. Mm-hmm. They don't belong to, you remember there was Jurgensen Ford?
Sort of like factory-owned stores.
It belonged to Jurgensen.
Okay.
And then Jurgensen was forced to sell it to a minority owner. And those are what called dealer development. So the guy that they put in there owes them money. In fact, I designed Varsity Ford in Ann Arbor.
Oh, good.
And Mr. Henderson at the time, it was a company store. He was buying it from them. So those kind of stores are have a different thing than Village Ford, where Mr. Jim Sievert owns outright. So I don't know how that works out. I don't think they go to Jim Sievert or people like that
there's
and
a,
say.
There's a different kind of profit structure, certainly.
Well, they have to pay back the buy into the dealership with money.
Right.
Somehow.
Yeah. They have to pay for their franchise.
I don't know what General Motors calls theirs. I know Ford calls it dealer development.
Dealer development, okay. So here's the list of Chrysler dealers to be cut. So I thought I could find a list of GM dealers, but unless the dealers tell
you themselves.
Do they
give a total number?
Yeah, 1,100 GM dealers.
I meant the Chrysler. You gave the...
Yeah, Chrysler nationwide did tell us how many they were going to. 789. Of its 3,200 dealerships from Chrysler, and here are the here are some of the local ones in the Detroit area. Out of the 40 in Michigan that are going, and it's rich areas and poor areas too. So I don't think that's it. Apparently, it was just dealerships that specialize in one brand. Although the first one on my list, Bloomfield Hills Hudson Chrysler Jeep. I don't know where that is. Hudson Chrysler Jeep. You know, they're not just one brand. They sell Chryslers and they sell Jeeps, but apparently they're going. In Dearborn, the only one in Dearborn that I, there's a couple in Dearborn, but Dearborn on the east side here, Joe Ritchie of Dearborn is going to close.
Oh, my God.
Of course, he has dealerships
all
in Grosse
over.
Pointe, yeah, and I don't see his name mentioned anywhere else, but he's losing that. It's a relatively small, mostly a Dodge dealership.
But he has a Mitsubishi dealership across
the street. Well, and it might become all Mitsubishi. Who knows? That's his decision.
But it affects us here in Dearborn because it's a service we're losing.
Right, yeah. You won't have a Dodge dealer. Obviously, we have a Chrysler Plymouth dealer in West Dearborn on Michigan Avenue. I can't remember their name right now, but...
Westbourne Chrysler.
Westbourne, of course. Everything's Westbourne and West Dearborn. Okay, almost everything. In Detroit, Lockmore Chrysler Jeep. Lockmore. Is that on Michigan also?
Where are they located?
They're in Detroit. I can't remember exactly. I think they're on Michigan Avenue, but just further east. In Livonia Chrysler Jeep is going down. In Plymouth, Fox Hills Chrysler Jeep. Fox Hills, I've heard that name before. In Royal Oak, Village Chrysler Jeep. I think that's on Main Street.
That's a big thing on Woodward, isn't it?
Or maybe it's in Woodward, but it's on Royal Oak, and Royal Oak includes Woodward. Yeah, it could be. In Southfield, the one I heard on the news this morning, because they interviewed the owner there, Tamaroff Dodge.
Wow.
Of course, Tamaroff has a lot of different brands that they sell, not just Dodge alone. But
they're just taking the Dodge away from them.
Well, that's all they can, because the other brands, Tamaroff has Honda, too. Don't they do Honda out there?
Yes, it doesn't put them out of business.
Just opens up some floor space, I guess, and some lot space for them. Sterling Heights Monocotti Chrysler Jeep sales in Taylor. This is on Telegraph, so it's a great location. Century Dodge is going. And in Troy, Birmingham Chrysler Plymouth.
That's an old
one. Troy. And that's been there for a long time, too. Yeah, a lot of these have been around the country 40, 50 years. And the man from Tamaroff, who spoke on WDET news this morning, said didn't seem to be anything having to do with sales or proximity to other dealers. He said it just seems to be like all alone Dodge dealers. That if it was a single brand, then it was gone. So I don't know. I guess some dealers will carry Chrysler, Jeep, and Dodge, and definitely those are staying. But it doesn't make sense here that Chrysler and Jeep.
You know what else doesn't make
sense?
How about the people that have other brands? What?
You mean foreign car dealers, like whatever, Tamaroff and that? Yeah. Well, they weren't dumping on those people particularly, even though Joe Ritchie does have a foreign car franchise, and so does Tamaroff, as we just said.
I mean, I'm not running the company, but it seems to me, because Joe Ritchie has several other brands, that means he's economically stronger. Yeah. Why would you want to take it away from somebody like that?
Right. There hasn't been any release of information how these criteria were set officially. Okay, so I'm just letting you know that that's happening, but still there's going to be plenty of dealers around. That includes Ford, of course, and Chrysler and GM dealers. It's just the GM dealers you won't see anymore after apparently October 2010 is Pontiac, Saturn, Saab, or Hummer, even though those brands may be picked up and someone else may decide to try to,
A foreign manufacturer
build them.
Could take over Hummer.
Yes, any of them. Well,
that Saab had money.
Saab, maybe they could sell them to other people, because Saab is still going to be making cars in Sweden, although I read about this, is that, in Sweden they also have Volvo, but Volvo is owned by Ford right now.
I read that Saab was going into bankruptcy in Europe.
That's the problem. Yeah, and if they lose these Detroit dealers, U.S. dealers, a lot of their market will be immediately gone. The subsidy from GM will be gone, and the Swedish government has said, we're not going to bail you out. We're not going to do it. That's interesting, isn't it? Here's some people would call
a
socialist
government.
Well, they have
an aircraft division, too.
I don't think they've done planes for quite a while, though. But maybe they still make some turbine engines or something.
Depends
on what. Yeah, I think they're exclusively, they always advertise that they make jets, but I don't think they've made jets in a long time. I think they've only made cars and or maybe trucks. I think there might be Saab trucks in Europe, but not here.
There are.
But it's kind of interesting is that Sweden doesn't. They're not going to bail out Saab. Of course, they've still got Volvo, but they don't own that and control that anyway. That's Ford. So
Ford sold their interest in it to who? I forget.
No, not Volvo. Not yet. They
kept
might be looking.
Volvo,
they sold Land Rover and Jaguar to Tata.
Yeah.
In India, yes.
Big bus manufacturers. In the Middle East, you see nothing but Tata buses.
Getting into everything. Tata is just introduced in India, the cheapest car in the world. That the retail price there in U.S. dollar equivalent is about $2,700. It's a two-seater, but what do you want for $2,700, right?
Where would you drive it?
Well,
in the streets of Calcutta.
It's not going to go real fast, but it probably gets good. The main thing is it's very inexpensive in third world countries where people don't have as much money as we do, might buy a good number of them. Of course, they pollute like all IC, internal combustion engines, and that's the way it goes. So anyway, just in case you wanted the specifics there, that's why we did that story up front. I still have all my papers folded. Ned, did you want to make some comments about
the automobile
things? He's working on his headphones right now, folks.
The automobile industry is the most saddening, tragic thing that could happen to this country and in our region. I cannot believe it.
Well, their situation, the closing of all these. And of course, in Detroit is no longer going to be the auto capital of the world. I'm not sure we were for a long time. The only Detroit factory that is still producing cars is that one on the east side that Chrysler owns.
Chrysler,
that's doing
Jefferson Avenue,
the Jeep Grand Cherokee. And if they're able to keep the company afloat, they do have a new Jeep Grand Cherokee for 2011 planned. It might come out in 2010. It looks really super. The model has been already reviewed and tested by a few automotive critics, and they say it's great. It was actually based on Mercedes-Benz station wagon technology. I guess that came from their relationship originally when Daimler-Benz owned them, but that's what the design is. And they say it's a really super four-wheel drive, much improved over the current Jeep Grand Cherokee. The question is, will the company still be here? But by golly, yes.
They could always sell the Jeep brand to anybody.
They're still making this in Detroit, folks, and they still intend to if the company can stay above water. And the reviews say, even though it's an internal combustion engine, it's going to be great. Now, Chrysler's advertising that they make 8 brands in Detroit. And I don't know, is it 8 models, different kinds of Jeeps? I didn't know the Jefferson plant, and I'm not expecting you, Ned, to know either. But that's what they advertise. And then they show a picture. I just saw this commercial last night on TV. They show a picture of the Sebring convertible, Well, folks, that's made in Mexico. I know that as a fact. So what are the eight Chrysler models that are made still in Detroit factories? Now, they might also be made elsewhere, too. Are they talking about Detroit Windsor? Because I think they still have some Chrysler plants in Windsor.
Oh yeah,
They didn't say Windsor. They said made. Maybe they said, and I missed the word area, in the Detroit area, and Detroit area could very well include Windsor, since they're right next door to us here. They're right on top of us, you know. And
they're very
famous.
Some of them
can even hear WHFR over there by the river anyway. And so. You know, I know they were making minivans somewhere in Ontario.
They were making them in Windsor.
In Windsor,
I think. They're assembling Volkswagen's van in Windsor in the same line.
I
went to look at it.
Uh-huh.
It's the same vehicle. Its suspension is a little stiffer.
I see.
And it doesn't have some of the features the Chrysler van has. There's no refrigerator in it.
Mm-hmm. Let me just start covering some stories from the local newspapers, the Dearborn Times Herald and the Dearborn Press and Guide. From the I actually have, because I went there, the Downriver Sunday Times, which I don't get anymore as a subscription. I just get the Dearborn paper once a week. But there have been votes, elections in the nearby area in Wyandotte. Three former mayors are among the newly appointed city council. Former mayors and councilmen James DeSanta, Leonard Sabuda, and Lawrence Steck, STEC, won seats on the council. They weren't appointed then, they won them. And joining them will be, Daniel Galeski and incumbents Todd Browning and Sherry Sotheby Frick. But that's kind of interesting, is that the previous sitting mayor, DeSanta, and a former council mayor that... he chose to run for council instead of seeking re-election to mayor.
Are they term limited for being mayor?
No, they don't have term limits. City employees don't have term limits. The city could decide on that. We have state term limits, and we don't have any national term limits. But city people, they're, unless it's in your charter, and I don't believe any local area, city charters have term limits. That they can do this. Mr. DeSanta said he wants to spend more time with his 21 grandchildren. That could take time. I mean, even one a week, you only see each one twice a year. So
that's why he decided not to be mayor and,
right.
and ran
on the
for council
instead. Yeah.
Oh,
right. Of course, he had name recognition, and I guess he wasn't, had fairly good public opinion. He got 9% of the vote, which is interesting. You run for council, you don't need to get a majority. You just need to be one of the top whatever it is, you know, 7 or 8. As you know, since you ran for Dearborn Heights, they would do that way too, right? The top 6 or 7 in Dearborn Heights? How many
presently
council members?
There in Dearborn Heights, there's 4 incumbents are up.
Up for election. Yeah, they stagger the elections, as they say.
One year there's 3 and one year there's 4.
I always thought staggering elections means that those people that could only vote who staggered in. But no, that's not it.
It gets more confusing than that, because there are people that resign. Mm-hmm. Then you have elections for 2-year terms.
Right.
And then what happens, like in a little bit I'm going to report on what happened at Dearborn Heights, if you only have 8 people, double the number that's going to be elected, then there is no primary.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever the top 4 are, win, right?
Yeah, I'm done with the Wyandotte story. Why don't you go on and talk about the Dearborn Heights? So what's coming up there? Are they having an election soon for council?
The city of Dearborn Heights bit the bullet, like they say. All the particular races, there was not more than double the slate. For example, Mayor Poletko had no challenger, so there will not be a primary.
Obviously not, yeah.
The city treasurer, John Riley, had no one file against him, so he's in a race without a challenger. The city clerk, Judy Judinsky, had a filer, the famous Fundarski, the one
Mario
with the Nazi flag and his problems with that, has decided to file against her and run for city clerk.
Mm-hmm.
But since there was not another person, that means she has one challenger. But this, since there's only one challenger, there will not be a primary. And the four incumbent city council persons had four challengers, which means there will not be a primary. If there were five challengers, then in order to eliminate one person, there would have been a primary.
Oh, I see.
So in the city of Dearborn Heights, there will be no primary. The election will be in November. And I'll tell you who they are. I just told you who the other ones. I didn't tell you the council.
Right.
The incumbent council persons are Margaret Van Houten, Marge Horvath, Janet Badalow, and Thomas Berry. The challengers are Kathy Abdulhawk, Cindy Bugaleski, Jim Lynch, and myself, Ned Apigian.
You're running again. Is this your official announcement? You already took petitions out?
Oh, yeah. That was closed on the 12th.
I didn't know that.
Oh, I thought I
mean, I didn't know that you had put your hat in the ring.
Yeah, I put my hat in the ring. I went around and collected my shirts, your pants, everything. 144 signatures.
Mm-hmm.
And when they reach 100 good, they stop. That's one thing I learned, no matter how many you turn in.
I see.
And there's always a couple in there that shouldn't belong there. So I'm sure sometime in the future we'll interview all these people and see why you're running and why do we need you instead of them. And
well, we only have so much time, we can't do all of them, but if it's
if there's no primary,
that's
oh,
right.
There was the school races. I should report
Go
on
ahead.
That,
yeah.
too.
Mm-hmm.
Dearborn Heights is confused with several school districts.
Oh.
Could never understand why that is, but it is. Dearborn has one school district, right?
That's well, no. There is District 7 in
District 7 in Dearborn Heights.
Yeah, I know, but we vote on their people and their millage here. It's I don't quite understand the situation, but Dearborn actually runs part of the Dearborn Heights district, and it's referred to as District 7.
Oh, that's the district. It's called Fairlane. The district.
Is it?
Right.
Okay.
Other words, where sort of I live...
Northwest of Dearborn. Northwest Dearborn, would you say?
I would say it's everything west of Evergreen.
Okay.
East of Telegraph.
Okay, yeah.
Well, north of Ford Road, south mm-hmm. of Ann Arbor Trail. It's that little corner. The northeast corner there. So when there are school elections in Dearborn, I participate in the election.
Yes, that's right. That's what I was saying.
But if there are Dearborn, and since Dearborn Heights is divided into Crestwood, Westwood, 7, they have several.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the Westwood district is divided between Dearborn Heights and probably Inkster, because that's why I don't have the numbers. I went there this morning. That's why I just beat the buzzer when I walked in. Crestwood, the two incumbents, Ron Panetta and Ed Garcia, won. And the challengers, I remember, was Wanda Saad lost. And I'm trying to think who the other one was right off the top of my head. I didn't get that. But they've run before, the same two challengers against them. And
there a millage out there in Dearborn Heights?
It could have been for the
schools?
The school, right. But because I'm not on that ballot, I didn't look at that.
Okay. We'll try to report on that later. I see that, and thank you for the Dearborn Heights report. Yes, we will try, folks, to interview candidates for council and mayor too, unless they're unchallenged. We try, since we only have limited time here and we really can't give in-depth interviews as we like to do. We don't want to do 30-second sound bites. Other people do that, but I don't think that gives you a good idea who these people are. But I try to go for challengers, for
mm-hmm,
people that
sure.
you don't know the name of. And of course, alternative views, and sometimes some of these new candidates or people newly running have very, very interesting backgrounds and some ideas. Even if they don't get elected, the ideas may influence the others. So we will try to set up a schedule closer to the election, since most people will forget if we do the interviews now. Yeah. And even though Ned's on the staff here, it doesn't mean that he can't talk about his opinions and points of view, even though he's run before, and you may already know his background a little bit. But we'll try to get you in the mix there, Ned.
What happened in Dearborn? Do you have the result? How did theirs turn out? It's in the pressing guide. I didn't see it.
Yeah, it's just a matter of getting the petitions out there, and we don't know finally because today, the 15th, is the day that they have to pull back.
Oh, the withdrawal.
The 12th was the deadline for putting your valid petitions in. And I assume there's still an issue of counting the signatures, although in Dearborn, all you need is 100, and you can't have more than 200. So it can't take that long to for the city clerk's office to legitimize the signatures. So we'll probably know by Monday. Probably a press release, and next week papers will tell us. But
officially in the news. What I got is I went to the clerk's office.
But we do know that, and this was an issue, the Dearborn City Council President, Thomas P. Tefelski, I never said his middle initial before, is Thomas Tefelski, on Tuesday, at the last minute, I guess, I mean, last day, filed the necessary papers to place his name on the ballot for the city's upcoming city council elections if they need them in August and, of course, for the primary and November, if there's enough people. The announcement effectively ended speculation that he would challenge Mayor Jack O'Reilly for his job. So it sure looks like that the mayor will not have any challengers at this point. Someone else did pull out a petition for mayor, and
didn't turn him in.
We don't know if they turned them back in. That's continued on 13A, so let me turn the page here just to double-check that.
This is an old trick to scare off your competitors.
Right. Yep. Okay, so we turn to page 13A, and there's no continuation. I hate that when it happens.
You mean the paper made a mistake?
Well, it says, see, console, page 13A, and it does say console, but what the heck is that? Oh, it's Tefelski's positions on things, so it's like his press release, what he felt he did and what he could improve. As people know, I mean, he got the most votes last time, second most to Mayor, President O'Reilly, and of course then O'Reilly went on to be able to temporarily be acting mayor, and then he got elected mayor, and so that left Tefelski as the highest vote getter on the council. And then I think they added someone, was it George Duraney, or they added
Duraney.
Someone to bring in to the right number. This is a year and a half, 2 years ago now.
Right. I remember him.
Right. And so Tefelski has been, in effect, the council president and MC, if you will, master of ceremonies, the in charge of all the council meetings. And I've seen him many times on cable TV do that. He does a competent job. I don't know where he gets his hair gel from, but it's really slick, let me say that about him. If I had more hair, I would use hair slick too. Just, it's so cool. Anyway, Mr. Tefel, that's not a reason to vote for him, folks. By the way, the opinions we express here on the show, I need to say this once every hour.
Or against him.
Yeah, are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, staff, administrators, president, students, whatever. But maybe. And they don't tell us what to say, which is thank you very much. So anyway, we'll see what happens. Tefelski was the one who said, I don't know if I want to run because I think we need new ideas on the council, which means almost meant to me that he was suggesting that his ideas weren't all that new, or if he had new ideas and he thought he had new ideas, nobody was supporting him. And several times he was, amazing for the council president, on the short end of a lot of votes. He and Doug Thomas usually agreed to vote against a lot of major issues over the last couple of years. And so that can't make him happy, is that the other council members are not seeing things the way he does. And especially it's unusual for a council president to be at odds. But again, he was not elected council president. He got the second highest number of votes. And he, you might say, inherited, was thrust into the limelight when O'Reilly moved on to be mayor. And so we'll see what happens in the fall. But we do hope to see, we'll tell you next Friday on the show exactly who the final names are for the council race and whether or not there'll be a primary, for mayor. Well, if there's only two candidates, if that other person who took out a petition for mayor against O'Reilly didn't return his petition, and this story doesn't say that, then O'Reilly is all alone on the ballot, and there won't be a primary for mayor. Okay, what else in this paper here? I think that's all. Crestwood, it says, re-elects incumbents. Someone by the name of Don Freed is ousted in Westwood during their elections. But incumbents get back in a lot. It's easy for them because they have name recognition. And especially these off normal election times. I mean, the only normal election that most people think about is November. Yeah, well, and once every 4 years, the November presidential election. So in the spring, not a lot of people who might vote in November even think about voting or hear about voting. And so a very, very, very small percentage of people actually are the ones that get their way and get their people elected. So it helps to organize, helps to be in touch by reading your local papers and listening to WHFR.FM, Making Waves. In this edition, too, I wanted to commend the Press and Guide. Maybe you saw this, Ned, on last Sunday's edition. They started something that I was hoping would happen and probably took them a lot of work. Tim Powers, who is the editor of the Press and Guide, and Lena Kazouz, and that's K-H-Z-O-U-Z, got her picture in there, too. Hi, Lena. Hi, Tim. His picture's there, too. Is they started a full page, and this is page 4A from last Sunday, May 10th, Dearborn Press and Guide, about what's happening in the State House. That's right, in Lansing. And I don't, you know, we don't get enough Lansing news, especially with the decline of the Detroit News and Detroit Free Press. And so they have five or six articles here that they have focused on. Even though it says State House Democrats vote to cut budgets, it's also some things that John Dingell is doing. Well, he's not in the State House, okay, or in the U.S. Senate. So we have stories about Dingell and Stabenow in there, too.
Well, it's...
gets me all choked up to think about this, but it's a good thing. It's all together there. It's easy to read, and of course, Dingell and Stabenow, they have public relations people, and they issue these statements every week. Usually, they don't get in the paper.
Well, we have a local news about the governor giving the right of returning wetlands permitting to the feds to operate. That's a local governor story here.
Mm-hmm.
It says, governor makes right call on returning wetland permitting to the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
It's a short article. We won't read it all, but it says, Governor Jennifer Granholm made the right policy call in announcing her decision to return wetland permitting to the federal government. Well, the announcement was met with heavy applause as she delivered her State of the State address, but since that time, there has been much criticism of the proposal from environmental groups and from members of both parties in the legislature, including Senator Patty Burkholz, Republican of Sagatok Township, Chairwoman of the Senate Natural Resources Environmental Committee. Opponents claim that wetlands in the state will go unprotected, but estimates of potentially unprotected wetland acreage are unreliable as the state's wetland inventory is not accurate.
Hmm. Okay.
Interesting story. Well, I don't know
how that goes. I've got some wetlands that Ford owns over by my place in East Dearborn, and I don't know what's going to happen there. I would trust the federal government would take over that responsibility. It might take a period of time before they do, but they've got criteria for it, and they've got some people. Last Thursday, a week ago yesterday, House Democrats, that is, here in Lansing, or is it House? Yeah, in Lansing, right. Mm-hmm. They voted to cut the budget for the legislature and judiciary by nearly $7 million in an effort to help balance the state budget for the remainder of 2009. The last I heard, though, Ned, is that we may be $1 billion in debt by the end of this year. So this little $7 million is a token.
I went to a hearing in Lansing about 5 months ago, maybe it was 3 months ago, where the architects of the state of Michigan were having their legislative day with their representatives.
Mm.
And they actually brought out a state economist, and I believe he said the budget was out of whack by $1.4 billion.
Mm.
And the interesting thing that we talked about off the cuff was the quality of the people, the ability to understand the sophistication of such a thing. He said, When you got a 22-year-old farmer that's never been here and doesn't understand anything about this, I don't know how you begin to approach these problems.
Yeah. And I think that what we're talking about here, they're cutting $7 million from this year's budget,
right?
And that just goes until the end of June, and then July is the new one. So that $1.4 billion is projected for the next year.
Yeah, it could have been deficit. Next year's.
Yeah.
But they have no choice.
It does say here, it says it'll help balance the budget by cutting $7 million from what they already approved for this year. By the way, in March, the House did approve a 10% pay cut for themselves, as well as the salary of the governor, the lieutenant governor, attorney general, and secretary of state.
All right, that's not bad. A state rep makes $80,000, so he's still making $72,000. That's a lot of money. I wish somebody would pay me $72,000 a year. I'd be happy.
Well, there you go. How much do they pay in for that consul job?
Consul job pays about something less than $9,000.
Yeah, just
$8,800.
Just considered part time, in effect.
The chairperson, whoever that is, makes a little more. Makes about like $10,000 something.
John Dingell made a statement after Ford Motor announced plans to transform the Michigan assembly plant in Wayne, Michigan, which had made the large sport utility vehicles, probably the Explorer and the Expedition and so on. They're going to transfer it into a plant that makes small cars, including a battery electric Ford Focus in 2011. So all electric Ford Focus is coming in 2011, and it's going to be right here in Michigan. Now, a lot of that money does come from the federal government to develop alternative energy vehicles, and so it's not all Ford there. Other people make contributions. Apparently, Jennifer Granholm lobbied for this. The state of Michigan, Wayne County, and city of Wayne contributed more than $160 million, too. So everybody came together to keep Ford in that plant and to help with that renovation. But
well, at least they didn't take any federal government. Nobody's telling them who to hire and fire, right?
Well, right, yeah. No, Ford has not taken bailouts at this point. So,
people worried about the Ford Motor Company going bankrupt. I don't have any Ford stock. I wish I'd bought it when it was a dollar, because what is it, four or five now?
It's over five, and yeah, I did.
Look at that. If you had bought 10,000 shares at a dollar, you would have had $50,000.
I bought two shares in December myself, not to make money, but just an investment in America. And I bought a number of companies, just a share or two here or there.
You did the right thing.
And I don't care about redeeming it, but oh my gosh, my money has almost tripled because everything was so low. Now, as long as the company doesn't go bankrupt, out of business,
no chance of that.
You know, it's only bound to go.
Do you know how much stock the Ford family has in that company? You think for 1 minute the Ford family is going to allow that company to go bankrupt?
Well, they're probably
buy up that stock at $1 and $2, and I understand they just reissued 350,000 shares.
Yeah, that did drop the value from I think $6 a share for Ford to $5 a share, but because people say, "Ooh, they're diluting the value of the stock," but there's people that will buy that. They know it's the only large viable U.S. Car company that I say viable because they haven't needed a bailout yet. And they still have cash on hand to tide them through the tougher economic times. So if people start buying any cars, they'll have a pretty good situation. So we're not recommending. We don't recommend stock buying here, folks. And I just did it again. I expected to lose money even, but I just wanted to do some sort of token investment in America thing, even though Ford is a big company over there. I wanted to mention in the Press and Guide, also from last Sunday, and commend them when they have editorials. In this case, it's their publisher. Well, he's the executive editor of the Heritage Newspapers, Carl Ziemek. Ziemek. And it goes on the old issue of term limits. And we have them in the state of Michigan, as I said. He says, but do they really work? Well, I won't read the whole article for you, but by golly, they don't really work, folks. We get people in office, well-intentioned, who don't know how to do their job. And he even quotes Gary Warrenchuk here, who was our rep for 6 years, three terms in the House from Dearborn area, who I interviewed on my show at the end of his last term before he ran for Wayne County
Commissioner. Take him two terms to learn the job.
That's what he said. He said, I'm just barely understanding and getting the knowledge needed, and he was a knowledgeable newspaper guy before he went into that. He was editor of the Dearborn Press and Guide for 8 years.
Really?
10 years? I didn't know that. Yeah, yeah. So he was well connected with information, an intelligent guy. But, you know, how do you get bills passed? And how do you get friendships and relationships? It takes you a while to become a good legislator. And if you don't have legislators that are already trained and knowledgeable and know the system of how to get things done, you're a victim of the lobbyists, the people that give you information and say, vote this way, vote that way, or the majority leader of your party who says, hey, do what we tell you. You're a Democrat or you're a Republican or whatever. In fact, Gary Warrenchak had enough knowledge is that he didn't vote with the Republican Party many times. And, of course, that I guess that's one reason that led to his running as a Democrat now in for the Wayne County Commissioner, which is not term limited, and he'll if he wants to, forever. he could, yeah. If something doesn't,
if he
come
didn't
up.
Run as a Democrat, he would lose
in Wayne County, of course.
In Wayne County, and he right. needed that $80,000 job.
Yeah,
I don't blame him.
I don't blame him. But Mayor Guido, when he was alive and active here for many, many years as our mayor, he said, we already have term limits. It's called elections. If you don't like someone, you can vote them out. It's true incumbents, as we just reported earlier, they very often get reelected by people that don't keep up with the news. And they say, I know that name. Yeah, I'll vote for that person. And they don't know anything about why they're voting for that person other than maybe party affiliation. So that's one thing. The charter, the Constitutional Review Commission is coming up again in Michigan in a year or so. We need to vote. Yes, we want to do it. And one of the things, by golly, we need some significant change in the governmental structure in Michigan. And one of those things is, if you love still and admire the work of Mayor Guido or Carl Ziemek of the Heritage Newspapers or yours truly or almost anyone that knows government knows that term limits are not good, okay? Because these people, these well-intentioned new people going into office are sort of naive. Okay, and they don't have the resources to fight or stand up against the vested interests of people who may not have the best interest of the population as a whole or a large percent of the population as a whole. So good for Carl. I always love to see editorial opinions well expressed in the local papers, even though his opinion goes into several papers.
On that subject there's two key committees that amateurs have, it's impossible. Budgeting and appropriations, you have to really know something about that in order to participate. Yeah. You know, who do we have in the federal government? What's his name from Wisconsin? It slips me now.
Well, not the senator. We don't know
the congressman that's chairman of appropriations. What's his name now? With the beard.
Don't know. I know the
These
other
are guys that have been doing that job for 20 years. They understand everything about appropriations. Yeah. And you might say, well, they shouldn't have it for life. The big problem with government is the following. It's gerrymandering districts.
Yes.
If Judge so-and-so, that name you know, I mean, how many Judge Giles are there around that you see on the ballot? You don't know if it's his daughter or his grandson. Mm-hmm. That I hated. That's why I got into politics in the first place. I call it the name, change the name game, you know, run the children on the same name. Our biggest problem in government is that most of our congressional districts are gerrymandered in such event that almost 85% are you can't defeat the incumbent. Mm-hmm. Now, we need to make a rule at this constitutional convention that political districts should follow county lines, city, districts, borders, some sort of sensible relationship so that we're not making these wandering snakes that go all over the place just so X can be elected. I think we ought to give a station ID, Jay. What do you think?
Absolutely not. No. Not? No. I got a hot story here. Well, actually, I wanted to just do a couple more. And this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves, coming to you from Henry Ford Community College. Ned Apigian and Jay Koronick with you today on the air. That's the kind of ID. You say, who are these people? They don't say who they are.
And
if
who
you
cares
just tuned
what they
in,
think?
Well, we've got the microphone. And if you'd like to join us here, if
Send
you qualify, you can take our training class. It's called WHFR Staff Training. There's a college, a center of lifelong learning here at Henry Ford Community College, where even if you don't want to sign up for the academic version, you can still sign up, and you still need to pass. It's a pass-fail thing. Our next class doesn't start, our new class just started, so you just missed that, but our next one starts in July, early July. So you can get more information at hfcc.edu. Go to the Center for Lifelong Learning, or it's an academic credit class, 1 hour credit, meets the same time, same place, same content, but there's grades of A to E.
Ned, so we did a live PSA today.
We did that. We did an ad lib PSA,
yes,
which is not a dirty thing. It's public service announcement. Okay. Right. In the press and guide also, they have a big story, and why not? Although we're not supporting one business over the other here, we can't do commercials. But there's a couple of new eateries in West Dearborn. Thank goodness, because a number of them have closed. But there are a few new places, and one which is very interesting. Haven't been in there yet, but it's in the, get this, the former resident was Dunkin' Donuts in West Dearborn at Monroe Street and Michigan, across from the Sacred Heart Church. Ned is nodding. Yep. It is now a Japanese sushi bar called Kabuki. And they have a beautiful picture of the owner and a chef there, I guess. And they talk about other restaurants that have opened in the nearby area. There's one down in Riverview, they mentioned, and so on. But I saw two or three that, of course, I can't remember now. LA Express is still there. And, you know, good luck to them, you know, and try them. Check them out. Some people, by the way, mistakenly think that sushi is uncooked fish. And there are some things on the menu where it is uncooked fish. But it's not like blowfish or something that's dangerous, you know. And it's, you know, there are several sushi restaurants around Detroit. One that I've tried is in Southgate. It's one of the first. Imagine, Southgate, Michigan. And I can't remember the name of it. Black Pine Tree Sushi or something. And they're always a fairly modest establishment. They're not high ticket necessarily. And they do have, just want to say, they do have a lot of very healthy things on the menu that are cooked, and it's not raw fish, okay? So just trying to help the business. If there was any thought of people, oh, I don't like raw fish, there's many things on the menu. Just ask what is already cooked and prepared, and it's very tasty stuff. I've eaten at sushi restaurants, not the raw fish stuff. I do have a slight aversion to the concept there myself, but it's all healthy. It's all health department certified, blah, 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 whatever you want to try. I'm just saying, give it a try. Support local business, okay? And there is new business in the West Dearborn area that you need to support, okay? And so go check it out. All right. I wanted to switch, and we only have 13 minutes before Highway 61 Blues. We hope Joanne Kurchinska will get here on time because of the traffic and some other business she had to take care of today, and Ned is going to leave me a few moments. But for weeks, I've been carrying these things around, Ned, and I wanted to talk about and remind our people, because it involves everybody in the U.S., is that healthcare reform is being talked about right now in the House and Senate in Washington, D.C. And here's the New York Times editorial, very briefly, that came from last month, but it says President Obama has called for sweeping health care reform and charged Congress with coming up with a program. Expect a tough political fight. Yeah, it's still going on. One of the most contentious issues is whether to include a new public plan option to compete with private insurance. Many Republicans deride it as a step towards socialized medicine. In other words, do we just tweak what we already have, which is not single-payer health care, which is just a horrendous system, folks? Okay, but the public plan that Obama has been pushing, it will offer consumers greater choice, keeping the private plans honest, and one can hope restrain the relentless growth in premiums and medical costs. And the New York Times says that seems worth trying. However, Public Citizen, which is a lobbyist group, a nonprofit group that think is a wonderful organization, it was started by Ralph Nader, but he hasn't been directly involved. They had in their...
Must be good, then.
Well, I think they're doing a great job and great news and information, especially about medical care and health costs. And I'm looking at the March-April edition of Public Citizen News right now that I get because I'm a subscriber, but you can probably go to their website, which is, of course, Citizen. No, it's very easy. It's not publiccitizen.org, although maybe they own that that address also. It's citizen.org, but in fact, it's the Public Citizen Organization. Dr. Sidney Wolfe, who works for them and is a columnist here, he says, single payer, the right solution. It's time for real health care reform in the United States. Like Canada has, France, England, Germany, we could pick the best aspects of these things. Well, is single payer on the table, so to speak? No, this is a very upset letter from Ralph Nader from Wednesday, May 6th, last week. Wednesday.
Because Obama wants to pass something, and yes, he knows it'll be a nightmare if you don't.
Well, there would be a lot of, definitely it's socialism, oh my God. And
they should give up their Social Security checks, too, yeah. Then they won't have any socialism.
But here's Ralph's very strong letter that he wrote last week, because he is putting his efforts into an organization called singlepayeraction.org. And he's not the leader of it, but he's a member, and there's all kinds of reasons for national health care, either the public plan that Obama's supporting, but single payer would actually be much better. And here's just real brief, I'll get this in. Yesterday morning, this is Tuesday, May 5th, 8 doctors, lawyers, and other activists stood up to Senator Mac Baucus. This is in Washington, D.C., and the private health insurance industry and the corporate liberals in Congress. Stood up against all of them because they don't want single payer. The 8 activists demanded that single payer, everybody in, nobody out, free choice of doctor and hospital, be put on the table for discussion. Look at it. It's true, it's all one way, okay, but look at that. Look at it rationally. And as a result, can you believe this? Maybe you heard about it. I did, just briefly on the national news. They were arrested. The 8 activists were arrested and charged with a so-called, quote, disruption of Congress, unquote. Because they asked to be heard. The Associated Press, Wall Street Journal, Politico, Democracy Now!, and National Public Radio all carried stories about the protest. C-SPAN even carried it live, and it was widely disseminated on the internet. Did it get on national news? Other than that, the commercial networks, Fox News, no, wasn't covered. Baucus crafted a hearing to kick off the health care debate in the Senate yesterday. This is, again, the 5th, where 15 witnesses would be at the table to discuss health care reform. The insurance industry was at the table. The business roundtable, capital B, capital R, was at the table. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce was at the table. Blue Cross Blue Shield was at the table. The Heritage Foundation, which is a conservative think tank, was at the table.
Who cares? Why are they there?
I don't understand. And corporate liberals like Andy Stern, Ron Pollack, and AARP were at the table. AARP were the ones that agreed with the horrendous drug care bill that Bush put in. Yeah, which I stopped my membership in AARP because of that. They said, well, at least it's something. It's terrible. It's a disaster, folks. It helps, but it's so confusing. It is not user-friendly. Single-payer health care is user-friendly. Folks, okay, drug costs are all paid for everybody. Healthcare costs are paid for by everybody. Now, there's a limit to special procedures, of course, in most countries that have this. But it's so much better than what we have. And we have over 50 million people with no healthcare coverage whatsoever or preventative healthcare coverage whatsoever in this country.
A great percentage of them choose not to buy healthcare.
Right.
I have a friend that does. He's been doing it for 50 years.
Well,
he's got plenty of life insurance. He doesn't think it's necessary.
If you invest in yourself rationally and you have enough money to do that, you can either pay for your own private health care or just save up tons of cash that in an emergency might be enough to cover. Although some continuing health care needs like cancer treatments or my little heart operation, I looked at the bill to Blue Cross Blue Shield.
How long would you have had to save for that?
$100,000. I did not have $100,000 as a teacher saved. And I don't know if they would have let me pay it off. I don't have enough years left in my life to pay off something like that. But so thank you, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and thank you, Henry Ford Community College, for giving me the full-time job that paid for that. But all these other people, I feel sorry for them. Over 50 million people, no health care coverage, and they probably, most of them, really need it. Not one person on this committee that Senator Baucus had already brought in who stood for what the majority of Americans, doctors, nurses, and health economists want, single payer, Joanne is here. Hello, welcome. Good to see you. Yes. Oh, it's brighter now. Joanne when she came in, the light came on.
Everything gets brighter when I arrive.
That's it, exactly. In
she
many
turned
ways.
The lights on. We've been in the dark and we didn't know it.
With me too.
Okay.
Look at who's here.
Yeah. Oh, Johnny Bassett, the legend, the man, the blues man is here with Joanne. Excellent. Well, we have 5 minutes yet, so you can take a chair, but you can't push us out. Okay, we're on a roll here. So anyway, as Ralph says, not one person has stood for single-payer health care. What the majority of Americans, doctors, nurses, and health economists want was at the table for that discussion.
I watched that program, and I did hear some noise in the background, but the camera didn't switch on.
Now, Ralph wasn't one that was arrested. He said, because he's not directly in this, he's not taking the point, although he's a part and he supports this organization. He says, when I heard about this corporate lineup last week, I called the office of Senator Baucus and politely asked that, as a matter of fairness, a single-payer doctor be allowed to testify. I was told, no way, Ralph, the deal is done. So yesterday, this is a week ago, May 5th, at 10 a.m., the Baucus 8, led by Single Payer Action and other single payer groups, took to the Senate Finance Committee and directly and respectfully confronted a room full of corporate lobbyists and corporate-controlled senators and again asked that a group of doctors who were in the room to support Medicare for All be allowed to testify. The answer again, no, no, no. And remember what Senator Richard Durbin, Nader goes on to say, said last week? Durbin said that the banks own Congress. To which we may add, says Nader, the health insurance industry and the drug industry own the Senate. Faxing, writing, and emailing is not getting it done. Enough is enough. Time for action. This is a winnable issue, he says. He says the American people need to focus on 535 members of Congress and get mobilized. If you want more information on that topic, either go to citizen.org or singlepayeraction.org. They need to be at the table. And I know, pragmatically, Ned is right. Obama may not think he has the votes because once Fox News Channel and their so-called pundits, their semi-educated spokespersons, get going, it'll seem like socialism and destruction of the American way, which is just wrong, wrong, wrong. Nobody calls the Canadian socialist or thinks any less of them for that, or for that matter, in my opinion, the French, the Germans, or the British, who also have, and the Swedish, and the Norwegians, who have this kind of responsibility to all the people in their society. Because what it'll do is lower the cost. This is what Citizen Action, Public Citizen, has said, too.
You're going to have to pay in this plan. That's the beauty of it. No, Obama never said you're going to get it for free.
No,
that's what's
right.
being missed here. He
that's
said,
right. yeah.
affordable,
there'll be a public plan, but
affordable health insurance.
It may be a buck or two less than the private companies, but it's going
it's
to
be
not
a lot
be
less.
Cheap.
It's not going to be $1,000 a month for everybody unless you have six. The real solution to the problem is real. You make categories.
Mm-hmm.
When a person is young and 20, he doesn't want to buy insurance. I'm sorry, you got to buy it at $200 a month.
Yeah.
And when you get to be 40, or maybe it goes up, or when you have a family or married, or you just have a categories that raise up based on your need, then there's an extra. If you know you want to pay for the heart transplants, you want to make sure you're covered for that, that should go into another category. But preventive care things should be reasonable so everybody can afford it. That's the issue.
Yeah, I agree totally. And what I'd like to conclude
I hire with, people in my senior citizens building, and a health insurance plan costs us $1,000 a month a person.
Wow.
That's a $1,000 benefit, yeah, any way you look at it.
And as the car industry had said, too, one reason they couldn't be competitive
$1,500
is because
a car.
They have to pay all the health insurance costs, which are going through the roof. And Germany and France and all in
it's
Canada—
not there.
The government pays for the health care through their single-payer health care system. If the car industry has said, we could be competitive, maybe we wouldn't have needed a bailout if we hadn't have had to pay for all this health care and even the health care for the retirees.
If I was king, every time they brought an imported car here, they have to pay me $1,500, so I give it to the car companies, and they could pay their insurance and level the playing field.
I don't think we have kings anymore, but we'll keep you in mind for that, Ned. Good luck with your race for the console. Thanks for being with me today. What I'd like to
it's
do
always
since,
a pleasure.
Since we have a very special guest right here, ready for Joanne's startup, we're going to conclude now. And what I'm going to do, though, is so I can get out of the chair and so on, make space for the next show, is feature Jim Hightower's editorial opinion for 2 minutes on healthcare regulations. He's our progressive from Austin, Texas. He's the one that Ralph Nader said, if I don't run for president, this is the last time, Jim Hightower should. That's how well-regarded Hightower is by Ralph Nader. So not directly single-payer, but healthcare regs, and then we'll go right into the Highway 61 theme. This is WHFR Dearborn. Thanks for listening, and take care out there.
Regulate the health insurance giants, chanted the reformers. Stop denying coverage to sick people, they demanded. Health coverage for all, they bellowed. The amazing thing about this recent cry for health care reform is that those doing the chanting, demanding, and bellowing were not aggrieved outsiders, but the ultimate insiders, the health insurance industry itself. When the dogs begin demanding leashes, you know that something unusual is afoot. What's going on here is that the top dogs of this industry now realize that they can no longer stiff the people's demand for an overhaul of America's avaricious and arrogant insurance-controlled healthcare system. Obama has moved this reform to the front burner, and his legislative package includes a proposal that has panicked insurance corporations, for it could truly stop their gouging. Rather than leave us consumers at the mercy of the profit-driven private insurance giants, his proposal would give us the choice of buying into a new public health insurance plan. This public alternative would provide real competition, lower our costs, and bring some honesty into a system that presently lets corporate insurers freely profiteer on sick people. So, industry lobbyists are swarming Congress to try to kill the public option in exchange for accepting new regulations. Please, they implore, harness us with regulations, but don't make us compete in an honest system. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, they know that down the road their lawyers and lobbyists will be able to weaken any regulatory harnesses, letting them slip away and continue gouging us for their fun and profit. By so loudly demanding regulation and opposing real competition, these profiteers are admitting that it's the competition that is needed if we're ever to put care back in America's healthcare system. We must insist that Obama stand firm on including the public insurance option.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.